Ariel Helwani's MMA show is presented by Modelo, brewed for those with a fighting spirit.
Hello, friends. Hope you're doing well. Welcome back to another episode of DC and Helwani. It's great to be here with all of you. Now, before we get to today's show, which, by the way, might be our best one yet, let me tell you about our good friends over at ESPN Daily. I'm sure by now you have seen the Last Dance docuseries that has been airing on ESPN. Episodes 3 and 4 of the series aired Sunday night. It's about the Chicago Bulls and Michael Jordan. I can't get enough of it. I love it. Love every second of it. I'm actually kind of sad when it's over. That's how much I'm loving it. And as you know, in MMA, we talk about characters all the time. That's what makes the fight game so great. Well, how about Dennis Rodman? What a character he was. In fact, he dabbled in the world of pro wrestling. Hopefully we'll hear about that a little later on. If you want to hear more about the man they used to call the Worm or Rodzilla, check out today's episode of ESPN Daily, where the great Mina Kimes talks with Tim Kuhn, the man who co-authored Rodman's autobiography back in 1996 at the height of his popularity. And if that's not enough for you, my pals, Jalen Rose and David Jacoby, aka Jalen and Jacoby, host a wrap-up show which drops Sunday nights immediately after the broadcast. It's called Jalen and Jacoby, The After Show, presented by State Farm and AT&T. And you can get it wherever you get your podcast. And by the way, my good pal, Jason Hare, the director of this darn thing, is on it each and every week. He provides great insight. I highly suggest you check it out.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ariel Helwani's MMA Show.
Back in your life on this Monday, April 27, 2020. Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to a brand new episode of DC and Helwani right here on the litany of ESPN MMA channels. I'm Helwani. That's DC, Daniel Cormier, Ariel Helwani, of course, and we are presented by Modelo, brewed for those with the fighting spirit. Daniel, how are you?
I'm pretty good, man. You know, just kind of hanging out, looking at my sprinkler system, which is not very good. Thinking about the fact that we lost a sponsor from last weekend. I mean, I don't get
what
it,
are you
man.
Talking
Things
about?
Are going sideways on this really
Things
fast.
Are going great.
I mean, we were
you're
rolling.
Looking svelte, by the way, DC. Can we address this right at the top? Is it the blue? What's going on?
Well, you know, last week I told you I was very heavy and, I've lost a few pounds. You know, I was asking myself, can I do better? Can I do better? You should do better, DC. And it's still all bad. Like, it's still all bad. But I've lost a few pounds. I got on the treadmill for 4 days last week, starting to run, try to get my act together a little bit. But I did question whether or not I could have a heart attack on my first run. But it's going good.
By the way, I just saw a recording thing pop up. I just want to know from Corporate Jake, you were recording this whole time, right? I mean, like last time it was like a few,
come on,
you know.
Jake.
I don't know. Okay. Just want to make sure from Corporate Jake over there because so I just Jake, saw the Jake thing Jake, pop up.
Quarantine has taken a toll on old Jake's brain at times, but it's okay. He'll get through it.
How many LBs are we down?
We're down 4 right now. We're down 4. It's not enough, though. It's not enough. We still got some work to do, but we're down 4, and that's good.
So what are you at, 270 now?
You know, if I told you the truth on my weight last week, it would be 253, but – I think you know wrestlers. They're usually a pound or two or 10 off when they tell you their weight. But I wasn't 10 heavier. You know, maybe, you know, pound maybe. Just depending on what I ate the night before. But I'm down 4 pounds and I feel good. I feel good, Ariel. I feel happy. I feel healthy. And I'm looking to get this fight going.
Considering the state that we're in, like, as far as the sweatpants go, how high are we – you know, like putting them up.
Hey, Ariel, sweatpants over the belly, but then the belly is fighting so hard that it rolls back under. They roll back under. My sweatpants can't even stay over my belly at this point. Like they roll under. Like my sweatpants actually roll back under my stomach. It's awful. Like I cannot even, I barely can sleep in the bed with my wife because I snore so loud. Every time I can't wait, I start to snore so bad that I gotta sleep on the couch. I'm like, hey, and then I'm mad. Errol, then I'm the one that's mad because I'm snoring so loud she taps me. I'm like, you're bothering my sleep, woman. I'd rather sleep on the couch where she doesn't wake me up. How rude of her to wake me up. Like, you want to go to bed and I'm snoring? Go to bed first.
Right.
You know, go to bed first. Because if you stay up and then I'm sleeping comfortably, you know, like the nice little angel that I am. Yeah, I know I'm snoring, but you know, now you're interrupting me. Don't wake me up out of my sleep. You messed up. Beat me to bed, Eric.
Well, you know, I'm excited about today's interview.
I mean, I can only imagine how much you snore with that nose you got on your face right now.
Believe it or not,
terrible snore.
I'm not a big snorer.
Come on.
And I tried to sneak in a diss right there, but you missed it. You totally flew right by it. Did you hear it or no?
No, I didn't hear it.
I said I was excited about today's
interview. You're about to say interview, huh? You can't laugh at your own jokes when they suck. Hey, don't laugh at your own jokes when they suck. Oh my goodness, dude! I'll hang this call up right now.
Tell them how I got you yesterday. Tell the world how I got you yesterday with my text. How I fooled you. Tell them.
Oh, you're gonna take a week off. You're gonna take the week off now. That's what you're doing.
So, I said, come on, you thought for a second I'm going to take the week off.
Hey, Eric.
Tell them.
You have gotten so big, your rivalries, Helwani boxing, gotten so big that you're canceling on me now. You're canceling on me now?
You needed to pull me back. I was kind of like, you know what? I've done a lot, you know, during this quarantine.
I brought this dude to the show. You're like, I brought this dude to the show, and now I'm going to put him back in his place. Yeah, that's one of the texts you sent me. Let's not even get into the other despicable things you sent me yesterday. You're awful. To the point that I was like, hey, listen, Darren Till. I started to agree with Darren Till a little bit. I was like, I feel like Darren Till. I want to hit this dude.
What about that poster that I dropped? That's some nice stuff, right? Did you see that poster? I mean, the quarantine championship. Speaking of posters, shout out to my guy, Robert. We need to talk about this. Robert Pearson made us this amazing poster and you are getting killed for this poster because they all think that you made it and you made yourself look like The Rock. You got this nice slim figure, the neck. Well, what's going on with this poster, DC? Did you have any creative influence on this?
So here's the deal. I was shown three copies of it.
Okay.
Right? I was shown three copies of the poster. The first one was a little pudgy. You know, then I said, make him a little less pudgy. And then he made him a little less pudgy. And then I said, shave his head, make his face look like mine, but like The Rock. And then I want my body to look like The Rock. So don't hate. I mean, people are hating because I look like Dwayne Johnson. Like, it's not my fault that there's a very strong resemblance between me and The Rock. It's like, I always fancy myself a major hater, but these people in the world today, are getting ridiculous because I look like The Rock. What's wrong with the picture? I think it looks phenomenal.
I think it looks great. And now more than ever.
I scooped you last week. You showed it to me.
I sent it to you just to get you excited and you posted first.
That's the way it is, man. You know, we're in this game together, but you know, we're still fighting for first place.
You deserve some shine. Now more than ever, you look like The Rock. Let's see what's going on.
Yeah, I shaved my head. Ariel, listen.
The little island patch is gone. It's done. Rest in peace.
You never told me. You didn't tell me. With friends like you, who needs enemy? If I had just a small patch in the middle,
that was it.
It looked pretty good. I thought it was like a fade right here.
Yeah, it was
nothing on top.
Just like right here. It was just like a little island. Wait, so what happened? Why'd you do it? Is this the first time?
That's the first time. Just because I couldn't get a haircut. You know, honestly, you know, another thing that really kind of jacked me up was whenever I got a haircut, I was so excited about going on our show.
Yeah.
And I was like, it was when you couldn't get a haircut.
Right.
And then I got a fresh haircut. And when I showed it, you said, what happened? Did you do what Shaq did? And I was like, you can't possibly look as bad as Shaq. I was like, what? It looks like Shaq's. I was like, what? It looks like Shaq's. When it was fresh and you thought it was like Shaq, I was like, it's time to cut it. If it looks like Shaq's, I was like, it's over.
I legit thought that you were doing a joke when you showed me that. Like, I thought.
So crazy. I was so excited about getting a haircut when you couldn't. And you asked me if I did what Shaq did. I was like, that's a wrap. But I can't guarantee that when we go back to this whole thing, that I'm not going to do, you know, what LeBron does and, you know, with the hair follicles. And
yeah,
I mean, here's the deal, Ariel, and I'm not trying to be arrogant, but you know, I'm a guy that has done well in life. And listen,
that's like the most arrogant thing you could say. Yes, please. I'm not trying to be arrogant, but just let you know, I'm doing a lot better than all of you.
I've done well, right? So I can have any hairline I want. So if I decide I want my hair to look like Michael Strahan's, I will do that. There are hair follicles that they pour into your head, and I can have an edge up that goes straight across, Ariel. My edge up can look like yours, just way more straight. It won't look like an animal attacked the front of my head. It looks like an animal just gnawed on the top of your head.
What are you talking about? This is all natural.
Your hairline is so crooked. It's like your barber just was like, he's like playing with it.
There is no crooked. This is my hairline. This is my natural hairline.
That's very unfortunate, then.
You think it's a bad look? I got a widow's peak. You see that?
You cut that off.
No, you don't cut that off, because then it grows back and it looks
weird.
You
have a widow's peak. You don't have a widow's peak. If you had a widow's peak, it would go all the way down here like Habib's. Have you seen Habib's? Habib's look like Eddie Munster. We always call him Eddie Munster. He said, hey, did little Habib have this? He gets so mad when we call him Eddie Munster.
This is a little more pronounced, but I have one right there. You see it?
I don't see it. Maybe it's the phone. Maybe it's the quality of your video because you like to use your phone. I can't see it. It's not as clear as mine.
How are things going between like trying to mend the fences with me and Habib? Or any updates on that?
You and Habib? No.
Yeah, you said you're going to like work to mend the fences.
Yeah, but I've made no progress. He's proven to be very difficult. He's even more, Habib is even more difficult than Darren Till and Dylan Dennis.
Yeah, you see me roast him on Twitter last week? I mean, he hasn't been heard from since. He has not been heard from since.
Yeah, he's gone.
Done. Like your hairline.
He's
like the little island, DC Island. Forget about Fight Island, DC Island. RIP.
Hey, that was good. That was good. I gotta be honest. Your trash talk game has been upped during quarantine. Unfortunately, quarantine is going to end, and you're gonna have to see these people. And the more you insult me, the more I think about not protecting you. And then you're really in trouble. That thing Darren Till put up the other day that says the next time I'm going to see Ariel at a show and DC's not there, he's that guy standing by in the wall. Darren Till's good.
Darren Till is good.
Ben Askren has kind of fallen off, but he came back a little bit. Ben came back a little bit. But Darren Till's good. Dylan Dennis is bad. But so we're like right in the middle. You know, Ben's decent. Darren Till's good. Dennis says trash talk needs some work. He needs to talk to Connor. Maybe Connor can help him a little bit.
I feel like we should talk about something fighting related at this point.
Yes, please. Fight Island isn't a thing yet,
but you know what is a thing? Jacksonville, Florida, May 9th, UFC 249. Are you going to Jacksonville?
I'm going to Jacksonville.
Wow. So you were going to Jacksonville. You are Mr. Reliable for the UFC. You were going to Tachi. Now you're going to Jacksonville. Are you doing all three shows?
I'm going to Jacksonville, baby.
Home of the Jaguars.
Jacksonville for a week. I'm going for a week.
You're going to do all three shows.
I'm doing two of them.
Okay.
I'm going to do two.
Which one? 9th and 13th?
I'm doing the 9th and the 13th. I'm going to Jacksonville, baby. Hey, when they call me, I'm going, put me in, coach. I'm ready to play. I'm ready to play.
Today.
Put me in, coach. I'm ready to play.
Today. Look at me.
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready to play. Coach, put me in.
But just to be clear, because people are going to, you're going to call fights, not fight.
I'm calling fights. I'm not fighting. Coaches, hey, coach, I'm not ready to fight yet, but I'm ready to play. Coach, I'm ready to call. You call my number. I'm ready. Call on DC. I'm ready. I show up. Yeah, I'm going to Jacksonville. I wouldn't miss watching two of my favorite people in the world fight for the Bantamweight Championship of the World, Dominic Cruz and Henry Cejudo, two of the most elite athletes of all time. And two of the best personalities in the entire game fighting for the UFC championship. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
So you're going to go?
I'm going, baby.
Tell us about the logistics. Is it the same thing with the three people like on
you, Anik Rogue? I would imagine. They haven't told me. They haven't updated.
Where are you going to stay?
Honestly, man, I think Florida might be about open.
Right.
If I'm being honest, I think Florida's about open. I just hope that there aren't a whole bunch of people like rolling around the casino. I hope that those types of,
this is not a casino. This is a legit arena.
Are, Okay, so at a hotel, I hope just like the hotel's like not just like open to the public. I hope that it's more laid back, because if it is, you know, then I'm just gonna kick back in my room. Once I check in, I'm there and I'm good. I'm just gonna kick back and order DoorDash, do my research. Now, going to the fight is not one thing. Here's the difference. When I get home now, I'm not allowed to come back home.
Says who?
My wife. My wife.
This is a dream for her.
No, I'm serious. When I go, I'm going to be gone for a week. When I come home, my wife has a mandatory 2-week quarantine.
No
away
way.
From her and the kids. I'm telling you, man, I can't come home. I can't come home. I go work for them. And then I come home and the heavyweight champion of the world, Selena Cormier, tells me I have to stay in a different house, dog. Like, I can't live
where
with
her. Where are you
going to
stay?
I prefer not to share that type of
interview. Oh, okay.
Because then you will paint me into something. You'll try to paint me
where are you going to stay? I mean, I'm concerned.
Nope.
Do you want to? No, you have a place?
There's a place to stay. But I'm not going to tell you, because you're going to try to paint me into something that I'm not.
Is there like a hotel that you like pay for, or is like like an Airbnb?
You're so stupid. You think I'm dumb, huh? You think you're going to get it? No, it's not a hotel, but I'm not going to say it. So,
is it a place that you like pay to stay there, or do you have it in your possession?
It's something in my possession. It's I moved recently and I haven't sold my other house yet. So, or gotten rid of my
second house.
Yes, my second house.
I remember you had $20 to your name and you were sleeping on Crazy Bob Cook's floor.
I was like The Rock, you know. Remember, see, another thing me and The Rock share. You remember what Vince McMahon did for The Rock? The Rock had $18. They gave him a contract.
I think it's $7.
Was he at, did he get $7?
That's the name of his promotion, of his production company.
Yep, $7.
What's going on with this mug that you have here? Can we address this first? What's happening?
What? It's my coffee.
What's happening? This is your mug?
Yeah, I got this from my friend Tiago Beowulf. It's a stepbrother's mug. He's from Brazil. Dude knew two words in English. It's amazing. I showed him stepbrothers. He thinks it's the greatest movie of all time. And so he bought me a mug. He thinks that him and I are stepbrothers. Yeah, he's a great guy.
Hey, can I ask you something about Henry Cejudo? Because this clip resurfaced yesterday when Dominic was on my show last September. He was in Abu Dhabi. He dropped an incredible promo. He cut this amazing promo on Cejudo saying that they used to – trained together in Arizona, and like Cejudo's almost this test tube Olympic baby where he was coddled his whole life. He doesn't really know. And being champion, being a gold medalist, this all defines him. You know, he needs this sort of thing to feel important. Honestly, is that the Henry Cejudo that you know? Cause you were on the same team as him 2008, right? Was he just like was he a weird cat in 2008? Be honest with me.
Let me tell you this right now about Henry Cejudo. I think where the whole cringe thing, right? People almost take him like not serious. That would be the biggest mistake you could ever make in your life. This is a kid that left Arizona as a 16-year-old kid to live in the Olympic Training Center and go through our training camps, Ariel. He would wrestle with the adults, with the senior team, and then go wrestle for his high school in the matches. That dude's real, man. Wow. And if Dominic believes that this kid's been coddled or anything like that, that's a problem, because this dude has always been one of the hardest working people I've ever met. Now, with that being said, this cringe thing is a part of an act, right? But imagine being a 15-year-old kid and you're uprooted from Arizona and put into the Olympic program, right? Your high school isn't the same. Your high school experience isn't the same. So all the things that Dominic did, Henry didn't have to do that, because he was this kid that was almost a protege that was getting groomed to be an Olympian. So, of course, that's going to come with some differences, right? So, yeah, maybe the cringe thing is a little bit of an act, but that's part of who Henry is. He is a little bit different because his experiences are much different than everybody else, right? He was a protege. He was groomed to be this champion, and he's proven to be that champion at every step of the way, right? Olympic champ, UFC champion. He was that guy that was almost like, it was like, that was almost his destiny. And so of course he's different. He didn't deal with everything that I dealt with, you know, like as a high school kid. You know, he wasn't, when he got out of high school, he went to the Olympic Training Center, not just some small room to practice wrestling like the rest of us did. So yeah, he's different. He's much different, but it doesn't make him any less real. He's as dangerous as they come. And I mean, that's me from being a person that was in that environment with him, seeing that little boy with the freckles all over his face in there wrestling 25, 26 year old men. But what do you feel like as a person just from the outside, right? Is that what it seems like for him? Like he was almost like coddled?
Well, I don't know that. I mean, I wasn't there, right? So I can't really weigh in on this.
But that's the thing, though. I'm asking, what does it seem like from the outside? Because that's what Dominic's actually talking about.
Dominic was there.
No, Dominic's talking from the outside. Because if he's speaking to being coddled, all this stuff, he knows nothing about until Henry walked into Arizona. He doesn't know what Henry's journey entailed before he got to that gym in Arizona where they trained together.
Sure, but they were pretty young, right, at that time. So, I mean, he would know more than me. He was saying that they were young kids and that he was the one, the golden child that was chosen. I just think it's interesting because he is trying to almost explain why Henry is the way he is. But here's the thing. I don't believe Henry's just a really smart promoter. I think that when he came into the UFC, he was just very vanilla and he was a bit of a showman. Remember, he came out wearing the gold outfit, the Spartan outfit, all that stuff. But once he started to realize like, hey, I got something here. And by the way, I gave him, let's just shoot right here. I gave him the Triple C moniker. Him and his coach, Captain Eric Albarracin, who still hasn't talked to me in 9 months because I didn't, or maybe 6 months, 5 months, whatever it is, because I didn't give him the Coach of the Year award. I gave it to Eugene Behrman. They're all mad at me for that. I mean, it's like the most ridiculous thing in the world. They wanted to call themselves Champ, Champ, Champ. And I was like, no, that sounds dumb. Think of your own gimmick, Triple C, right? So if you want to give someone credit here
from Triple G, right?
No.
Triple G. You took it from somebody.
So way better than Champ, Champ, Champ. I can assure you of that. Way better than Champ, Champ, Champ.
It is a little better, but it always comes from somewhere. So I guess maybe I'll give Triple H the credit for it, right? Because we're all stealing something. Right, we all steal.
That's fine,
something.
But you have to adapt. They were trying to steal from Connor and call themselves Champ, 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 which is the dumbest thing in the world.
Well, do you know when I won the second belt, I didn't want to be called Champ, Champ. I wanted to be called the Double Champ, right? Because it's a little bit different than what Connor was called. You know, so when they would say Champ, Champ, I said no, call me Double Champ, right? Just a little bit different, my own thing,
of course,
opposed to what. Because Connor, you know, he's so big that it's hard to kind of follow in his footsteps. So to be called Champ, Champ, Champ would have been a mistake because it would have
been corny as hell.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been good.
But I like the Cejudo gimmick.
It's part of him. That's not just a gimmick. I'm telling you.
Well, that was my question to you originally. Yeah, was he like that as a kid? He was like awkward and stuff and making bad jokes.
Well, he was awkward because he was a kid, right? Mm. Remember, he's Henry Cejudo as a 17-year-old kid is talking to me as a 26-year-old man, right? Mm. So we're looking at this little boy like this dude makes awkward jokes. He's a kid, right? Even as an Olympic champion, he was only 21 years old, I believe, right? So he was still awkward. But that is who Henry is a little bit. He does make bad jokes. And he does sometimes not – there are times where he's not truly aware of whether or not something's as funny as he may think it is. Okay. But just know that he is the realest. I mean, it worked. If there was a test of whether or not you could train a young man to become Olympic champ and then a UFC champion, it's Henry Cejudo, and it worked, right? So whoever made the pivot from wrestler to fighter was right, and whoever made the pivot from go become a state champion to trying to be an Olympic champion was right. So it all worked for Henry Cejudo, man. Dominic better not underestimate this dude because if he does, he's going to get beat. Point blank.
By the way, when Henry won gold in 2008, and of course you didn't, were you jealous of the little kid? Be honest.
No. I was so happy for him.
Because you were not, part of me was like, come on, this little schmuck won and no. I can't win?
It's almost like you watch a kid. Bro, there are two guys I watched become Olympic champ, Cale Sanderson and Henry Cejudo. And they just were different. Like, I remember being in the Olympic, not the Olympic Village, but at that college where we trained in 04. We would work out so hard, and then we'd go to eat lunch, and guess who would be on the track running an extra like 2-3 miles? Cale Sanderson, right? And I just like, it was like he was different, right? So you just were happy for him when he won. And Henry Cejudo was the same. You watch Henry lose in 07 and was last place in the world championships, but then you watch the work he put in the 12 months that followed, that when he won, I mean, I remember being in the hospital after that weight cut, and somebody might have gave me Henry Cejudo won, and I was, happy for him because you knew that the dude had put the work in to be the best. And you can see it even in the fights, man. He was fighting Marlon Moraes and was just like, yo, this is not happening to me. enough is enough. I'm just going to go get this dude. So he just went in his face and just beat him up until Marlon fell down and got beat. That's just one of the toughest dudes in the world. Henry just made a decision that tonight wasn't his night. And because of all the work he put in, he can do stuff like that. Not everybody can do that.
The most fascinating story on this card, with all due respect to Tony Ferguson, Justin Gaethje, everyone who's on the card. I mean, top to bottom, Fabricio coming back, Fabricio Verdum. The most fascinating story on this card to me is Dominic Cruz. The guy hasn't fought in almost 4 years. Mm-hmm. He's in his mid-30s, the former champ coming back. And what makes it so interesting is he's been the loudest guy who has said ring rust isn't a real thing.
He can prove it now.
I've proven it twice before. He came back to fight Mizugaki, came back three times to fight Mizugaki, Dillashaw, and then he had the Garbrandt fight, which he lost. Do you believe in this? Because now it's not just ring rust, it's ring rust plus father time. Now he's in his mid-30s, right? So it has to catch up to you at some point, right?
I think he's another master of preparation. I think he's just another master of preparation. You know, one of those guys that believes so strongly that he's prepared that he can say ring rust doesn't exist. But I don't know. This dude has just been,
you believe it exists?
I do. I'm one of the guys that do think ring rust exists, a little bit. You know, I don't think it's such a big factor when you've been fighting so long. That's why Stipe could come back after a year and beat me, right? Like that's, you know, it takes a little bit of time, but once you got 25 minutes, you can work through 25 minutes of a fight. I believe that's the case. But I think what's more impressive about Dominic is the will to, he almost willed this title shot into existence. You know, when he first started saying, I'm going to get a title shot, everybody laughed at him. Like, yeah, you're crazy. You've been gone for so long. But he said, no, I'm going to get a title shot. And then they right before he got his title fight, Ariel, they said he turned away a fight against Corey Sandhagen, right? Like, was it Sandhagen?
Yeah.
He turned down the Sandhagen fight, right? And everybody's like, oh, he's scared to fight. He's not going to do this. Maybe, but Dominic, who I had spoken to personally, was like, I deserve a title shot. He was like, I want to fight for the belt. And so if he did say no to the Sandhagen fight, it worked. He really willed this title fight into existence. And I know when him and I spoke and he was like, what are you going to do? And I was like, I'm going to fight for the belt. You know, that's what I want to do. I think that's what's fair to me. He goes, I feel the same way. And as a friend, I said, you know, everything you've done in the sport says that you deserve title fights, but it's been so long. You know, are you going to be able to get it? And he was like, I want a title fight. And he was so stern in his belief that he deserved a title fight. And, you know, Aldo gets stuck in Brazil, a pandemic happens, because he almost willed this thing into existence. It's crazy, man. You know, I don't remember if we talked about this last week, but to me, I think even more, I know it's a big story, the Dominic Cruz thing. But I think the Amanda Nunes thing too, right? Like did we talk about this last week?
No, it actually happened like 4 hours after us.
Yeah, I think I think that's the bigger thing. Just because she's like, I'm not doing it. She's in Florida, right? She's in Florida. It's close to drive. She is more like, she was just so in tune with herself. Like, I can't prepare myself effectively. And it takes courage to say, I'm not going to fight. Because, you know, all of us are screaming, we'll fight. Amanda being the double champion and the greatest fighter in female history was just like, I'm not doing it. And I can't prepare myself effectively. You know, what do you think of that?
Well, so this is so interesting because there's now two fighters on the record who have said in the midst of all of this, I don't feel comfortable, right? Two fighters, right?
Amanda and
Khabib.
Yeah.
And what do they have in common? They're two of the biggest names in the sport. No. And here's the thing. They have the most to lose. So what I wrote in my column last week, will we see more big name fighters, more champions say, because look, a challenger has the most to gain. Like Felicia Spencer also lives in Florida. Mm-hmm. But for her, like, okay, I'm just going to drive, you know, throw caution to the wind. To me, it's the big dogs, the champions who have the most to lose.
I think you're trying to spin a narrative. You're trying to spin a narrative here.
What are you talking about?
Khabib did not say he wouldn't fight. That's not true.
He did say, DC,
no, he
stop
didn't.
It.
No, he's going to. Keep he was going to fight.
Defending
no,
him.
Khabib was going
changed
to fight.
His story. He was don't make this into fight. An Ariel versus Khabib
no,
thing.
No,
he said it's a pandemic, it's and no, I respect him for it.
No, it's not. Ariel, listen. No, he did not say he would not fight. He said he would have fought if they would have told him where the fight was. Even afterwards, when he was like, I'm stuck in Russia, but if you tell me where I got to go fight, and if it's available and I can get there, I'll go fight. He always said that. No, it wasn't him.
I was trying to give him props.
No, I hear
you. You're trying to spin me into the bad guy.
No, I'm not trying to spin you into the bad guy. I just think, I don't think you're trying to make him bad. I think you're just misunderstanding a little bit what happened. Because again, you and Habib don't talk. So it's like I'm listening to his interviews. Yeah, but I think
why you gotta say that? By the way, why you gotta say that? You and Habib don't talk. Why you gotta pour salt in the wound?
I'm not trying to pour salt in the wound. I'm saying, you did. And you've done a lot to help him over the course of his career. I think he gets confused a little bit, trying to like really speak English all the time and just trying to really explain himself. I think he gets confused. Even that message he wrote, when I spoke to him a couple hours afterwards and he said something completely different, right? Mm-hmm. He was still cutting weight. So I think it's just confusion. He would have fought. I think Amanda's the first.
Okay, Amanda's the first. Is that going to lead to more fighters who are going to say, this isn't good? Or do you think it's just because it's the first one, once we get rolling, everyone mm-hmm. will know, like, this is a real thing, right?
I think everybody's going to be willing to fight once it just gets rolling.
So does that make you lose respect for her?
Not really. I think her being aware is a big thing. And honestly, like you said, she can do that. Right. A lot of people don't want to like say, I'm not going to fight, but I respect Amanda because she wants to be prepared to the best of her ability, but also just to know that she can't train herself effectively. I believe, me personally, that you can make it work in this situation. I do. I really do believe.
It's so hard though, right? I mean, you have so much to lose if you're a champion like Amanda. If you don't have the perfect situation around you, what's the point?
So here's the deal, right? Like, we understand that this pandemic is so dangerous and you can get sick, but let me explain to you the steps, right? And this is what I intend to do myself, right? You get your partners, and then your partners have to commit to you over the course of your training camp. And if they don't, then don't use them. And then honestly, if you have to make it financially rewarding to them to where they have that incentive to want to do it. Like, if you're a champion, right, and you want to compete, which is what champions do, you make it work. You don't need 20 training partners. You need some people to spar, you need coaches, and then you need bodies. You need bodies. You can do a full training camp with three bodies because most times one person can't spar you over five rounds, right? You need three bodies. They can rotate rounds for sparring. And then they can rotate grappling rounds. Then all you need is your cardio and your coaches. Like, you can make it work. You just have to, get creative, but it can work, Ariel. For sure it can work. I think Amanda could have made it work with all those girls that train at ATT and the guys that she spars. She could have made it work, but knowing her preparation before, she just didn't want to do it. And hats off to Amanda, understanding that. And hats off to the UFC for accepting that from one of the best fighters they have in the organization.
I can understand where she's coming from. You know, her partner, Nina, is pregnant, so maybe there's some concerns there.
Yep.
Dan Lambert told me that, you know, she was banged up a little bit. So again, if it's not perfect, I can understand why someone would say, but they've announced May 9th, May 13th, and May 16th, they're going to happen in Jacksonville. And Dana has already said, like, they're trying to go every Saturday and they're going to sprinkle in some Wednesday cards or some midweek cards to try to make up for lost time. I suspect by the time your number gets called, if it is going to be in the late summer and if everything continues to go the way it's going, you'll be at the apex. You won't be in Jacksonville or one of these random places. What's going on there? What are you doing, DC? Are you focused? Are you locked in? What's happening?
I was saying hi to Selena. She just came to the kitchen. I was just telling Selena hi.
So that's what I suspect. Before we continue, let me tell you, DC, about our good friends over at
Modelo
Especial. Let's tell you about our good friends over at Modelo. They are brewed for those with a fighting spirit. If you didn't already know, Modelo is the official beer of the UFC and even partners with the aforementioned Amanda Nunes. How about that segue? She's got the fighting spirit, which means never giving up, even when the odds are against her. For all of you out there partaking in the critically acclaimed Helwani boxing movement that is sweeping the nation, you all have the fighting spirit too. I see it in all of you. DC, not so sure, but the rest of you, you've got it deep down inside. Because it doesn't matter where you come from or where you are now. It matters what you're made of. Just like all great beers. And that's why Modelo has been the gold standard since 1925. Modelo is a crisp, Pilsner-style lager that sets the standard for authentic Mexican beer. Say it with me now, DC. Crisp.
Crisp.
There's nothing better. There's nothing better. Modelo uses premium hops to give the golden lager its crisp taste. So when you're tuning into the next UFC fight on May 9th, UFC 249, make sure you've got the beer that's always in your corner, Modelo. Root for those with a fighting spirit. Modelo Especial. And we remind you right here on DC and Helwani to drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois. DC?
Wait. So here's the deal. Next week, I'm reading the Modelo read because the first time I did, somebody said I read it like Rocky Balboa on the... What? You remember Rocky did that commercial?
Yeah,
and
he had
the meat on his face. They were like, hey, champ, we love you, man, but you read that like Rocky Balboa. So I have to read the Modelo thing next week, or people are going to think that you guys told me I couldn't do it anymore. So
okay.
Put my foot down. They think I read it like Rocky Balboa. That's crazy, man. People are just horrible on the internet. I'll tell you that.
I know. But for me, they love me. They're so nice to me. It's great. Thank you very much to Modelo. Support them because they support us. DC, let's get serious here for a second as you drink your Step Brothers. Is it Step Brothers? Is that the name of the movie?
Step Brothers, yes. Step Brothers.
I never saw it, by the way. Can you believe that?
Oh, come on, Ariel.
Never saw it.
It's a great movie. You'll
I don't know why I never saw that one. Like, comedies are sort of my thing, but I never saw that one.
It's so good.
I wanted to ask you about something, and I wanted to know if you can relate to this. I don't know if you saw this story, but mid to late last week, Robert Whittaker came out and spoke for the first time in a very long time, spoke to local paper down under. And he said that the reason for his absence wasn't because he donated his bone marrow to his daughter or anything like that. He said he burnt out. He hit the wall. He was doing sprints on Christmas Day and just stopped and said, I can't do this anymore. I've been going too much. I lost my belt. I got right back on the treadmill and I just stopped. I hit the wall and I burnt out is the term that he used. And of course, this is a man who has talked about, you know, dealing with depression and whatnot. And I really appreciate him taking the break, even while there are all these rumors about him and whatnot. He didn't address them. He just came out when he was comfortable saying that I burnt out. As a high level athlete who has been competing since he was a very young kid, first it was, you know, to get to a good college, and then it was the Olympics, and then it was, you know, fighting and whatnot. Do you sympathize with this? Have you ever experienced something like what Robert Whittaker spoke about?
Yeah, all the time. I mean, I think it's always like that, you know, where people are speaking about you. You know, I think the hardest times for me, and I think this is what happened with Rob, it's right after you lose a fight, right? Because everybody's talking for you. Or anytime you lose something, everybody's talking for you. Everybody's trying to figure out what you're doing, where you're going next. So it's hard to sit away and not say anything. You know, we're very in tune with what's going on. So even when, like, I've lost 3 times. And every time I lose, I try to take some time to myself to reevaluate, reassess everything, to try to change whatever went wrong to where it doesn't happen again. I'm still aware of what's going on around me. You know, when people start to question, you know, when you win, you know, they're calling you the greatest fighter of all time. But then when you lose, they start to take all those things away as if what you did prior does not matter. So you still have to stay within yourself and not address everybody or address all those allegations going forward. It's very difficult, but I think that's what happened to Rob, right? He gets beat by Izzy. He's back home. He's like, I'm going to start training to go and prove all these people that are saying these things wrong. And then they're talking about him giving bone marrow and his kid being sick and all these other things that just aren't true. Because no one knows what we're doing on a day-to-day basis, right? We're here and then we're gone. So it took a lot of strength for him to do that in the first place. And then, yeah, you can burn out. And it's not just physical burnout. I'm pretty sure Robert was burnt out mentally. I'm pretty sure he was burnt out physically. I'm pretty sure he just needed some time to, like, just breathe, right? And it's good that he can do that, you know, and say, you know, I need time. I need to get back to me. And I think athletes have to do that sometime. And I'm happy for Robert. You know, this guy has had a difficult it's been difficult for Rob, you know, to become the champion. Stay the champ and go through those wars with Romero and just those fights. It was, you know, it's good to see him kind of get back to Robert Whittaker and spend some time with his wife, Sophia.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Spend some time with his wife and their children and just like let all this other stuff that in the grand scheme of things don't matter affect you and affect your mental health and everything else. So yeah, good for Rob.
Yeah, and of course he had the collapsed bowel, right, when he had to withdraw
everything
from that fight. I mean, he's been through a lot. But here's the thing. There's a difference between feeling down after a loss or a setback, and then there's hitting the wall, getting burnt out, like needing a break, a mental break. I would imagine. I mean, I remember when we spoke about the E60 piece, you talked about after Olympics, like, you know, you had the blinds, you were down, but there's a difference, right? Like where you just want nothing to do with your profession,
with
right?
With sport. Yeah. And then honestly, like that was the thing with me, right? Like I took time away from wrestling. I was like, I just got to get away from this whole thing. Like, I don't like it. I didn't go to Oklahoma State as much. I still coach the kids because I love coaching the kids. I took a break, and then in 2009, I was like, you know what? I'm going to go see if I want to wrestle anymore. And I walked into the restroom at Arizona State University. I was with Kevin Jackson, and I got on the mat. I started wrestling with Terrell Delagnev, and I just was like, I don't have the desire to do this anymore. And that's when I immediately went and called Dwayne Zinkin about fighting. It was like, I was like, I don't desire this anymore. Like, this thing's done for me. And it wasn't even about being sad for the Olympics. Like, you know, my first thought was, go correct it, right? And I think this is what Robert was going through, right? He lost. Go correct it. Go beat the next guy to get right back in there with Izzy so you can correct it. And then after a while, he just kind of felt like I need some time. That was my thought right after the Olympics. You know, I took a little bit of go correct it. Go back, wrestle, and do better. And then once I got on the mat, I was like, this isn't for me anymore. I need something different. That's why I started fighting. And I think so. Yeah, I've burnt out. I mean, you got to think, man, all these times, you know, that I've done these things at such a high level, of course you get burnt out. And honestly, you could see it mostly in the motivation. There were times I think over my career, even in fighting, where I was burnt out and I maybe didn't want to fight, but I just felt like I just did it. And because I was better than the guys I won, you know, I think 2015 when I lost to Jones, I was so motivated. That's why I was able to go through that fight with Gustafson and then, go through that fight with Rumble the first time. No matter how bad the odds were, I was able to get through it because I was so motivated. And then I took the break after the Gustafson fight until to Anderson and thought, I'm ready to go, right? Like, I'm ready. I took enough time. I've had a break, and I'm motivated to fight. And I was going to fight Jones, and I was so excited about it. But then when I fought Anderson, I didn't feel like myself, right? Like, I fought him, and I won, but I didn't feel like myself. So then I just stopped again. I didn't go until December. I was supposed to fight December, and then I didn't fight in December. I didn't fight again until April when we fought in Buffalo. It was like I just needed time because I didn't feel like myself in that fight against Anderson Silva. It was like, but again, I was like, I was better than those guys, so I beat them. But when you got a guy that you're not better than or who is equal to you, if you're not motivated to do it, don't do it because you're not going to get over the hump.
I remember speaking to you. I'll never forget speaking to you after the second Jones fight. A few days later, I mean, you could hardly speak, but I'll never, ever, ever forget calling you to tell you that he popped again. I was in the media room for Maymac, and I asked you what you were doing, and I think you were on vacation, right?
Yep.
And then you started yelling at me because when you picked up the phone, you were like, hello, and you didn't really want to talk. And it was a month later. And
yeah,
you started, I was still like, shut up. And then you hung up on me.
Yeah. Remember that? It was just so disappointing, you know, like that was crazy, man. Like you're trying to get yourself together, you know, but yeah, it's just.
You've dealt with the losses really badly. I mean, like you were obviously very emotional after your losses. So I had a feeling that maybe you can sympathize with him, and then you try to get back on the treadmill right away. And then maybe doesn't you're like, work. Maybe I'm not ready, you know?
Not ready. Yeah. It's like, I feel what he's saying because that happens, man. And it's not even, and again, it's like, people need to understand what these fighters go through, you know, because they're like trying to get themselves up for the biggest thing that you could ever imagine. And then there's like this downtime, especially on the bad side of a fight, where you gotta still try to be a father. You still gotta still try to be a husband. You gotta still try to be all these things while also trying to wrap your mind around getting back whatever you just lost. So I love that Robert was able to take accountability for everything and say, you know what? I'm going to do this whenever I'm ready to do it. And so, yeah, it's good because he was going into another tough fight, right? Like, who was he scheduled to fight? Darren Till or somebody?
Yeah. Well, first he was supposed to fight Jared Cannonier in March.
Yeah. Like, come on. That dude's like on fire.
Yeah.
And it's always crazy too, right? Because like you're a guy that's a former champ and you're like, you've done this right for years to become the champion and to be the man and you're maintaining. And then you get beat and you're like, but they schedule you and you're doing this and there's a guy doing this, right? So if you're not 100% ready to go as you're going down from that massive moment, that guy, Jared Cannonier, is on fire. right? He's steaming towards the top of the division while Robert kind of is on this. I don't know how far the decline was going to be, but like, he just lost his title in front of 60,000 people at home against a guy that he wanted to shut up, right? So like, that's not a good situation to begin with. And if he's not 100% invested, 100% ready to go, then what if he loses again? Now it's over, right? Because you can still fight. You can still be, you're always the former champion. But it's over, man. Those dreams of being champ are pretty much done, and that's difficult. So I think it was a very, very smart move on the part of Robert Whittaker. He's a smart guy, though. He really is. I've spoken to him a lot. He's a good dude. He's very smart, very aware of everything.
And very nice as well.
I'm nice dude. To talk to him. Very nice dude.
Later this week, I'm looking forward to that because I don't want to say sensitive, but like he's in tune with, you know, it takes a lot of courage to talk about this. He talked about depression in the past. Yeah. So I appreciate Robert very much and we wish him the best. Now, last week I connected for the first time in 8 years with our old friend, Jason Mayhem Miller. It was great to connect with him again and to see that he's doing well. That really warmed my heart. And of course, back in the day, he hosted a show called Bully Beatdown. I don't know if you remember this show. It was on MTV for 3 years. You were never on that show, right?
I was on Bully Beatdown.
You were?
I fought a guy named Tyler. No lie.
What?
Ariel, I fought a guy.
I don't remember this.
I fought a guy named Tyler on Bully Beatdown. I beat him up real bad. He took a cigarette and he burned a guy on the chest. This kid in his college dorm, Tyler didn't want to burn his cigarettes out in an ashtray. He had a guy for that. He would take it on this poor kid's body.
So was it legit? Was it real?
I beat him bad, bro.
No, not the fights. Were these stories real? Were these bullies real people? Like, was it a real thing or was it a work?
If it wasn't, I don't know why those guys would sign up to get beat up like that. I mean.
And did someone sanction these matches?
They never made money. Cause we always just beat them up the whole time.
What are you possibly doing right now?
I'm trying to find this video. I'm looking through my pictures on my old Facebook.
I thought you were texting with someone. You were so bored.
I'm trying to get it because I want to show you what Mayhem Miller did to me at the beginning of my career. It's crazy what Mayhem Miller did to me in the beginning of my career, man. We were
training. With Bully Beatdown?
No. I used to train with Mayhem. Remember, he was King Mo's training partner. Ryan Parsons was their manager.
Yeah.
They had this small camp, right? It wasn't like a whole bunch of guys that trained together. It was just Mayhem, Mo, and just like a couple other people. As we go in and out, we would train in their gym. Well, I was training with Mayhem at the very beginning of my career. Bob Cook always told me, be careful training with too many people. You know, you don't know them. You haven't trained with them before. You got to be careful. So I was like, whatever, man. I'd go train with Mayhem. Well, I'm training with Mayhem. I go to shoot on him, and Mayhem knees me in the face, man. He was crazy. Mayhem knees me in the face when I was younger, and he gave me this big old cut. Now, I wasn't mad at him. I wasn't mad at him. It was an accident, but it was like, we were just kind of training, man. I don't know if you'll be able to see this picture. I'll put it right next to the camera. Look at my eye.
Yes.
Look at my eye. This was about a week and a half after Mayhem got me in practice. And he was so apologetic. I'm not trying to paint Mayhem as a.
Did you fight yet at this point?
I had started training and look at this. This is the cut right after we were bench pressing. You see
that?
That's
not a good training partner right there.
He did it. Like I was actually trying to shoot on him. You know, because that's all I did back in the day was shoot. And Mayhem was just a wild man. He was a wild man. He would train hard. He would work crazy hard. He was just sparring. And he cut me open right there over the eye. I think I still have the scar. But, And I'm just happy. I remember being with Mo back in 2009. And we'd go places with Mayhem. He was a massive star. Everybody knew him.
Yeah.
He always treated me so nicely. But he was just a wild man. And then he kind of went off the rails. But then seeing him the other day talking to you was very it was encouraging to see that he's doing so well. I'm happy for Mayhem.
I had no idea you were on Bully Beatdown.
I was. Yeah. Mayhem was always good to me, but you know, I'm happy he's doing better. And yes, I did win. I beat up on Tyler. Hey, listen to this though. Tyler was in Washington, D.C. a couple years back and we took a picture together.
Wow.
I was calling the fights and they said the guy from Bully Beatdown wants to see you. He was like yelling from behind the rail. They were like, there's a guy behind saying it was Niner. The guy named Craig Niner was like, there's a guy behind us saying that you fought him on Bully Beatdown. I was like, Tyler? And I looked behind him and sure, it was Tyler, the guy from Bully Beatdown.
So the reason I brought that up wasn't because of your connection to Mayhem or Tyler. I didn't even know you were on the show, but I was doing some researching I've talked to you about a lot of things, you know, about your past, but we never talked about this. You have a connection to the show because, correct me if I'm wrong, you too had a bully back in the day, right?
I had the worst bully. He was the worst. His name was Gilbert Francis. Gilbert Francis. His nickname is Mon.
Mon?
Mon. M. Mon. Like M A W N. Mon.
Okay. Say it. What does that mean?
Mon. I have no idea.
Mon.
Yeah, Mon. Mon was crazy, man. He was bad.
Gilbert Francis.
He would beat me at every chance. Ariel, he would beat me every chance he got. The dude.
How old are you?
I guess I was probably 7.
What?
I guess I was probably 7 years old. It was
7.
I was terrified. Yeah, I was like 7. Hey,
to the how point, old was he?
7 or 8, like maybe okay. 1 year older than me. I'll tell you the worst case. Okay, so one time, two girls were fighting next to my house. Mon comes walking across the tracks. He crossed through the park, and like I'm just watching the fight, like everybody else, right? I'm just trying to enjoy the festivity. He comes across the track. He just punches me for no reason. He's going to beat me, right? If there's a fight, why not beat Dan? So he beats me up. I run, take off. I didn't run, but I take my whipping, go to my house, you know, cry a little bit, get over it, knowing that when I go back to school the next day, he probably going to beat me again, right? But that's just what he did. One time we're driving home, walking home from school, and Mon is walking. It's Easter, right? And Mon is walking behind me, and I just got this feeling he's gonna beat me up, right? Like, you just know, going to Easter break, probably gonna get beat up. He takes the Easter egg and he hits me, boom, right in the eye with the egg.
Whoa.
So then I fall in the ditch, right? Now I'm like 7 years old, right? And I'm on the ground kind of holding my eye. And I have a friend named Terrell Blackwell, nicknamed T-Black. T-Black says, oh, you're in trouble now. Daniel's gonna beat you up. It's over. There's no way he's not gonna. I get up, man. I just walk home. I was beaten, Ariel. I was beaten. I was bruised. I was battered. I did not think I could beat him. I had no confidence when it came to him. I just always took it. And so then, as I got older, started wrestling. He tried to beat me up when I was a senior. I put him in a torture rack. He never grew. He stayed like,
wow,
he's the shortest guy. I put him in the torture rack a little bit. I was hurting him, so I let him go. Mon actually still thinks he can bully me. At this point, Aaron, he thinks today he can still bully me. He called me a couple years ago. For some reason, my little brother, Pharaoh, gave him my phone number. He's like, Daniel. I'm like, what's up, Gilbert? He goes, I'm at your mom's house, man. He was like, come back. I was like, okay. He's like, you better come back right now. I was like, yo, what are you talking about? I am the UFC champion. He can't beat me up anymore.
This is when you made it.
Bro, I was like 37 years old. He's like, I'm at your mom's house, man. Come over here. I'm trying to say what's up. He was like, and you better come yet. I was like, what are you talking about? I was like, if I don't come, what are you going to do? Beat me up? He thinks he can still beat me. He's like 5'3". He's shorter than Deron. He's been shorter than Deron and thinks he can beat me up. I love the guy. Like, I love him, right? Like, now we're friends and we're like, we talk and everything. You know, children, right? Like,
right.
I think for as bad as that was, it helped to form me. Kind of makes me aggressive. Like, it makes me a little bit aggressive. Like, if I feel like someone's trying to bully me, I always like go after them. You know, that was like something I developed as a defense mechanism. But I still believe that all those experiences shape you to be who you are. But now he's fine.
What does he do?
He doesn't do anything. He's just one of those dudes that's kind of just around. Not even that long ago, I saw him get into a fight at the park one time. He got stabbed. Oh, wow. He got stabbed in a fight. Like, we were late 20s, 30s, like, and he was still doing the same thing, you know? Like, you got to catch those kids that don't do the right thing. Sometimes you got to catch them and try to, like, put them on the right path, because if nobody does, their lives end up looking like that, right? You know, so, like, I ended up being who I am, and he's still at home. But, like, if I see him now, you know, like, I hug him and you know, talk to him, and I just hope that he doesn't get himself hurt or you know, real bad. But, yeah.
So, after the torture rack, that was it?
By the time I was like the number one kid in the country wrestling.
All right.
Like, he wasn't gonna like, he, you know, he kind of like was like, yo, this dude's got big. I was like 210 pounds. You know, he was still maybe 130, 140. He was a small guy, you know, so. But he tried to beat me up one time. I beat him up a little bit, choked him out, and then it was over. Until I became the UFC champion and decided he wanted to bully me again. It's the craziest thing in the world. You never had a bully?
I actually did. we have something in common. I had a bully in the first grade, so around the same age as you. My bully's name was Dahlia.
A woman. Of course. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness.
It's true.
Of course. It's true.
She was a terror. I'll never forget her for as long as I live. Can I tell you something? I used to sit next to her in class, first grade, and she would sit there and give me like the evil eye the whole time. It was horrible. So you know what I did? My mom asked the teacher if I could sit in the back of the class, and then she would sit and look at me like this the whole time. I could see it till today. Dahlia. I won't say her last name.
So she would just look at you.
Look at me. That was my bully.
You?
But then.
Would she hit you?
Well, here's the thing.
Be honest, would she hit you?
No, she would never hit me, but she had two older brothers that would confront me. So it was like, by extension, you know, it was almost like a 3-on-1. But she was the scariest person. Dahlia.
Oh, my goodness. Of course, it was a little girl.
I was terrified of her. And can I tell you where this story gets a little bit sad? Can I tell you where it gets a little sad?
No, please don't tell me the sad part because I'm still laughing. And okay, I'm going to seem like I'm so insensitive. Let me try to get myself together.
Dahlia, first grade. Okay. Unfortunately, the next year, Dahlia's mother passed away. But this is where it gets really messed up. Her mother passes away. And as a class, do you know what a shiva is? You've been to one?
No.
It's in the Jewish religion. When someone dies, you sit shiva, meaning the people who were closest to the person, you know, parent, whatever, they have to sit in their house and people come visit them and they pray together and you give them food. So as a class, my teachers thought it was a good idea that we go visit the shiva of our classmate. But we're young kids, right? We're like 7, 8 years old. Not a great idea. I'll never forget. We're all sitting there. I've never been to a shiva before. I never knew anyone who died. I was terrified. And it's my bully's house that I'm going to.
No, don't do this. Stop. I'm trying to keep it together. I'm trying to keep it together. All I can see is that. You went to her shiva and she beat you up, dog? No.
Worse. It was worse than that. It affected me. This must be 1990, if not 89. And I still remember it till this day. Sitting in her living room, scared.
She's sad at you again?
She's eating a banana and she comes up to me and she looks at everyone. She was terrifying. She looks at everyone and then she stops on me and she goes, "What are you doing here?" I will never forget that. I felt so bad.
She was bad. Oh my God.
I was like, here I am trying to pay respects and you're calling me out. What am I doing? I don't even want to be here.
She was bad.
She was bad. Oh, and then guess what? The next year she switched schools and I never saw her again.
You were probably so happy.
Oh, I was so happy. I was terrified of her. Dahlia. Every time I hear that name now, Dahlia is a very Jewish name. I get chills down my spine.
My goodness, bro. That is hilarious. It's hilarious, dog. Oh my goodness. I thought I had it bad. Mon used to beat me up so bad. Like we both used to get beat up. That's awful, man.
You got beat up physically. I got beat up emotionally.
I got beat up physically. I think it's worse what you got. You actually got it worse. She was intimidating you with her eyes. At least I just get some little beat up, you know, every now and again. But it's not as bad as what she did to you.
Dahlia.
Oh, it's so funny. Because I can get over it, right? Like, I can get over the physical fight.
Well, you also got to exact revenge. I never got revenge.
Well, because what are you going to do? Fight Dahlia? She probably would kick your butt. This is the same guy trying to bully Darren Till.
Why do you think I have all this anger in me towards these fighters? The Helwani Revenge Tour. Now, DC, speaking of which, last week you said you were disappointed with The Last Dance. Do you feel better after episodes 3 and 4? Because you felt bad for the late Jerry Krause.
I do.
See these segues that I have here? You know, I go from like funeral. Yeah, I'm pretty good at this stuff. Anyway, do you feel better now after 3 and 4? Do you still feel like he's getting a raw deal?
I liked it. I like 3 and 4. No. Listen, man, Jerry Krause, you know, his relationship with the guys, I'm starting to understand now that it was just that. You know, that's what it was, right? They didn't like him. But again, those guys went and got Dennis Rodman. I enjoyed the Dennis Rodman episode.
Oh,
I thought that was
so
my
good.
Favorite one so far.
I get sad after the episodes are over. Like, I want so
I wish
much
they
more.
Would just show, I wish they would just give us all 10 hours. Like, stop right. teasing the ESPN. Like, let's have all 10 hours of this, man. Like, it's
no, this is good. It gives me something to look forward to.
I want them all, man. I'm not very patient when it comes to stuff like that. I liked it. I like episode 3.
What about Rodman going to Vegas?
I like Rodman. Rodman, hey, I like what Mike said. Phil, you let this dude go to jail. He ain't going to come back. And then Carmen Electra's like, the door opens and it's Michael Jordan. Could you imagine? Could you imagine Michael Jordan being at the door of a Las Vegas hotel?
Okay, so that's the thing. People keep messing that up. It wasn't in Las Vegas. He was back in Chicago at this point, just not showing to practice.
Oh, he wasn't going to practice. Okay.
Yeah.
Could you imagine that, though? Michael Jordan showing up at the hotel like, hey, man, come to practice. Dude, this is crazy.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, all
right. What stories, man? Unbelievable. Like that this stuff was just out there and that it wasn't reported. We talked about this last week that it wasn't dissected a million times.
Okay, and here's why, right? There's a part of, and I think maybe I saw this on First Take, right? That it was someone saying that they're releasing the footage now because Jordan feels threatened that maybe people are starting to say LeBron is the best player of all time. Was that on First Take, right? That was on First Take, right?
This was a story written by Ramona Shelburne. Listen, if that's the motivation, that's the motivation. He shouldn't feel threatened. And unless you don't want, do you want me to expose you? This man sent me a text earlier to, I don't know what even prompted this, saying that LeBron is better than MJ. And I know you're just trolling me. I know you're just messing up.
I'm not trolling you. I'm not trolling
Michael Jordan
no,
is
I'm
not.
Asking, no, stop. I'm going to ask you. I want to ask this question.
Yeah.
Right? Because, bro, watching The Last Dance, mm-hmm. reminds me a little bit more. Oh, now I'm not so sure, right? Because, I'm like, wow. But I think more than ever, there's a conversation to be had.
Come
between
on.
Him and LeBron.
How
I'm just saying.
The guy's undefeated in the finals, never lost in the finals.
It's so crazy. It's like,
what are you talking about? That's it. That's where it ends. Oh, that's where the conversation ends.
That's not it.
What? How is that not it?
Listen. All right. Let me say this, right? Mike lost in the playoffs a number of times.
But when he got to the finals.
But LeBron never – LeBron wouldn't get to anything but the finals.
No,
LeBron
earlier
was getting
in,
to, LeBron
early
was
in his career.
Yeah, but LeBron was getting to nothing but the finals for the most part of his career. Also, he elevates every single team that he's on. The Lakers went from winning like 15, 20 games to being
in the not making the playoffs last year.
LeBron got hurt. When he was hurt, they were the fifth seed. They were the fifth seed.
I don't want this to be a LeBron versus Michael thing, but how with the straight face could you argue this?
Ariel, all I'm saying is I'm not saying he's better. I'm saying that what I don't like is this, right? What I don't like about these GOAT conversations is when people don't have conversations in regards to what's happening. Like, you got to understand, bro. Because Michael Jordan was the greatest basketball player of all time that we've ever seen. I get it. But that can't always just be the case without anyone ever wanting to talk about it. Like, you have to be willing to talk about it when a guy like LeBron comes along and does what he's done. Nobody wants to even like.
Who you put above? So are you saying MJ is number one?
I'm saying that there's a conversation to be had between LeBron and Michael Jordan to number one.
So LeBron is over Kobe?
Yes.
Wow.
I think.
See, I would go MJ, Kobe, Jordan, LeBron.
I think Jordan, LeBron, KB, number 3.
Wow.
Number 4.
So we're totally off.
Number 4, I would say, is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Right?
Someone I agree with that. Bill Russell.
Bill Russell's got to be in there. But again, bro, I sent you a video, right, of the way people played basketball back then. Bill Russell was just an outlier.
Yeah, you can't hold that against him.
I get it, though. But dude, just like LeBron. Look, you put LeBron back in the 80s and 90s, he kills the NBA.
He would kill. That's the guy's 275 pounds.
That's what I'm saying, bro. Bigger, stronger, faster, can do everything. I'm just trying to say we can't – even the Muhammad Ali thing, right, with Floyd Mayweather. People don't want to say, well, Muhammad Ali's the greatest boxer of all time. Rest in peace. Everybody loves Ali. But I think Floyd Mayweather is the best boxer of all time. Like, I mean, but I think you got to have a conversation. And I think in basketball, people aren't willing to have the conversation. And that's where the problem for me, I told my friend Jamil last night, said, he said, wow, basketball was so much better in the 90s. I'm like, but was it really? But was it really? Guys are so much more skilled today. Guys are, the game's so much faster. James Harden might have scored 50 points a game in the 90s. 50 points a game in the 90s.
No way.
Harden might have scored 50.
It was a way more physical game. They would never allow him to.
Bro, I saw a video.
He gets called. The people who say they breathe on him and it's a foul. You get your head knocked off in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, yeah. And then not get, the only difference, it was still a foul. Everybody said, you get your head knocked off, but it was still a foul. They would still call foul.
Like, let's not act like so many more points now because he goes to the free throw line so much more.
That's why he would shoot more fouls then, because they were always fouling with the hands.
No, but even now when you touch him, they call a foul.
Bro, here's the difference. They would still call foul in the 90s, in the 80s. It just wasn't a flagrant one and you didn't get thrown out of the game. That's right. The only difference. Today, if you foul like that, you get thrown out of the game. Back then, they would give you a foul, you would still play. That's it.
But it changes your mindset. You're thinking twice before you're going in there doing all this.
But Ariel, it was still a foul, Ariel. And then I saw a video the other day about, oh, the game was so much more physical. It was more physical as a whole. But there were still people flopping. They were still calling soft fouls when guys were going to the goal. It was the same thing. I saw a video of Michael Jordan actually calling a foul himself. He's playing for the Wizards. The referee actually didn't call foul. Mike was like, hey, man, that was a foul. Referee's like, was it Mike? Mike was like, dude had two hands on the ref was like, I didn't see two hands on you, Mike, but I believe you, Mike. And he called
no
the
way.
Foul. I will send you the video. Michael Jordan called a foul for himself.
Well, they were all afraid of him.
Bro, I'm telling you, it's like the game isn't much different, but I think, bro, Kevin Durant is 7 foot tall. Kristaps Porzingis, your boy, 7 foot tall. Karl Anthony Towns, them dudes all like they're so much more skilled than the big men in the game back then. Robert Parrish,
for sure.
All them dudes couldn't play like these.
But that
dudes.
Doesn't change the fact that MJ is the greatest of all time, period. And then there's a conversation to be had for number two. That's what I'll give you.
I think there's a conversation to be had for one.
No, get out of here.
I'm telling you, man.
You're insane, man.
You got to have the conversation.
That's like me saying you're better at Madden than Snoop Dogg.
No, I'm not. But here's the thing. Let me ask you a question, right?
Yes.
Let me ask you a question about like this fight, right? I tell you, a guy is considered one of the greatest fighters of all time.
Mm-hmm.
His championship record is 5-2-1. Does that eliminate him from the conversation?
It's different.
But that's me. I'm it's only 5-2-1 in championship fights.
And by the way, it's so different in MMA. You're talking about a punch here, this, like so much can change.
But do you understand?
It's a fun debate. Don't get me wrong. I just think very strongly that MJ is the best.
But that's like saying, well, I fought 8 or 9 championship fights, right? Lost multiple championship fights. It's like saying, well, LeBron can't be the greatest of all time because he played a lot of championship games and he lost in championship games. That's not a fair argument for what the guy has done and been in basketball. That's all I'm saying. It can't be the end of the argument because you go, MJ never lost. I think that's so stupid. I'm trying to count.
He had the one with Cleveland in 07, I believe it was off the top of my head. Then he had 11, 12, 13, 14 with Miami. And mm-hmm. then he had 15. He had 4 with Miami.
He never won one in Cleveland in the beginning. He won his
No. He made it to the finals, got swept by the Spurs.
Yes. Yes,
and then he had the 4 with Miami.
Yep.
Right? So that's 5.
5.
And then he had the 4 with Cleveland. So he's been to 9.
9.
And MJ went to 6.
He won 3. LeBron won 3, right?
Yes. And he won 2 with Miami, 1 with Cleveland later on. MJ went to 6. LeBron started his career earlier. Weaker Eastern Conference, never had to go through later, never have to go through like a Pistons or something like that. Listen, I love LeBron. I'm not a LeBron hater, so don't paint me as this guy.
I love LeBron. Okay.
But MJ to me.
I'm not an MJ hater.
Well, a little bit.
I'm not. I love Michael Jordan. I'm watching this thing going, Michael Jordan was the coolest person in the world. Mm-hmm. He was the coolest guy we've ever seen in the sport. He's one of the most talented guys we've ever seen. But I believe that at a point, as time goes by and the players continue to evolve and the players continue to get bigger, faster, stronger, better, more skilled, you have to start to have the conversation that nobody's untouchable in sport. And I think that's the problem. It's like in basketball, more than any sport in the world, people are seen as untouchable. Nobody thought that any quarterback would ever be better than Joe Montana before. Now, people consider Tom Brady the greatest quarterback of all time. They had the conversation. They were open to the conversation. In basketball, it's like no one wants to discuss it, and I think that's unfair, especially when you have a guy that's once in a lifetime like LeBron James.
I do appreciate LeBron more. You know who is a hater? Corporate Jake. He's freaking out over here. He's telling
We're way over schedule.
We are over. So I'll give you the final word on that. It's been fun. Thank you, DC. Thanks for joining us again, you know, making the time. I won't tell people that you were a little tardy this morning. You know, you were
I was a tad bit tardy.
But it's all good.
Don't make me call Dahlia.
Thank you very much to Modelo. We love them. Support them because they support us. DC, you're the man. I'll talk to you next Monday. Much love. Have a great week, everyone. We'll talk to you soon.